on which you can contact me from anywhere in the U.S., Canada, or the Caribbean. If you get a strange message that the number has been disconnected or whatever, have the operator dial it for you. My Skype username is drcarly1, but I use Skype primarily for my international clients and radio shows. I do not practice medicine nor give medical advice. Rather, I teach you what I would do if I were you to reverse disease with natural therapies in people and in pets. Archives of my shows for the past few years on various networks can be found at thelightofdayradioshow.com. Click on Dr. Carly Archives. If you have questions or comments during the show, you can call in at 785-336-5190. You can post a question in the chat room, or you can Skype in at PM Walk-in Turtle. Very important, callers need to mute their phones while waiting to be brought on so as not to cause interference with whoever is speaking. Please wait until the second hour to call in so I have an opportunity to introduce the guests and the topic of the week. One of the most important things you can do to protect yourself and your loved ones from the organisms being created by the mad scientists at the over 1,300 biowarfare labs in the U.S. alone, including the tweaked rabies virus that is now creating cannibalism, is purchase a silver lungs colloidal silver generator. Go to the link section of reversingvaccineinducediseases.com to learn how to obtain the silver generator I recommend and use personally for myself and all my pets. On today's show, the answer to the question, what's ailing the world, is global food imperialism. And I am thrilled to have as my guest one of the heroes globally in terms of trying to protect our rights to have supplements and also to keep our food protected. And this is a man by the name of Scott Tipps. He is president and legal counsel for the National Health Federation. Born and reared in Texas, Scott Tipps moved to California when he was 21. It was there that he earned his Bachelor of Arts degree, magna cum laude, from the University of California at Los Angeles while working at three jobs in order to put himself through school. Having read an article about how another student had lived and studied in France very inexpensively, Scott packed his bags and, knowing but three words of French, went to Paris to study French and history at the Sorbonne. After one school year there, he then returned to the United States where he spent the summer building houses to earn money for law school. He then moved to Berkeley, California, where he attended the University of California, Berkeley School of Law. At Bolt Hall, he was accepted onto the California Law Review, where he became its managing editor and helped to bring that journal back on schedule. After 3 years of study, Scott obtained his Juris Doctorate degree from Bolt Hall at California Berkeley School of Law, and then quickly took and passed the California Bar Exam. A California licensed attorney, he has specialized in food and drug law and trademark law, but also engages in business litigation, general business law, and nonprofit organizations with an international clientele. Since 1989, he has been the general counsel for the National Health Federation, the world's oldest health freedom organization for consumers, as well as the editor-in-chief of its magazine, Health Freedom News. In 2007, he became NHF president and has been a frequent speaker for the organization and for health freedom on several continents. A legal columnist, he writes a monthly column for Whole Foods magazine called Legal Tips, a column he started many years ago. Currently, he is primarily occupied with health freedom issues arising from national governments and such international organizations as the Codex Alimentarius Commission's attempts to limit individual freedom of choice in health matters. In that capacity, he has compiled, edited, and published a book on the subject entitled Codex Alimentarius Global Food Imperialism. He also attends Codex meetings worldwide and has attended more Codex meetings than any other health freedom activist. So on that note, I would like to thank you so much for coming on the show, Scott. Let me give out the website for the National Health Freedom, which is thenhf.com, www.thenhf.com. I encourage all of you to go to that website, get on their updates list so that you can keep you know, in tune and in knowing what's going on in this movement, because it is criminal what these monster psychopaths are doing and have been doing for some time in order to try to prevent us from having healthy food and good supplements, while all the while they're actually allowing us to be poisoned in so many ways, including all these toxic drugs by Big Pharma. And if you could start out, Scott, giving our listeners the big picture, because I'm sure a lot of our listeners, you know, trying to keep in touch with all the different things that these monsters are doing, may not even know what Codex Alimentarius is. If you could start out by giving a brief history of what this is all about, how Deshea actually came about because of consumer outrage, you know, demanding that they not proceed with their intent to take away our right to have supplements, and all the little serpent-like things that the psychopaths are doing to try to keep on bringing it about under different names. So take it away.
Okay. Well, thank you, Dr. Carley, for that wonderful introduction. I don't know if I really deserve such a nice introduction, but then I broke my hand once, and I didn't deserve that either. So maybe I'll just accept it graciously. Also, just one correction in what you said. At one point, you said National Health Freedom, and it is National Health Federation. There is another organization called National Health Freedom Coalition.
I apologize.
Yeah, it's a lovely organization, but it's not us. And in any event, National Health Federation, of which I'm the president and general counsel and have been lucky enough to be in that position for a while, is very unique in a number of ways. One, it's the oldest, as you very correctly pointed out, oldest organization in the world. And number two, it's unique in having the only seat for a health freedom organization or a health freedom voice at the Codex table. So as you quite aptly asked, what is Codex Alimentarius? And Codex Alimentarius is a body that was created under the auspices of the United Nations, particularly the FAO and the WHO, the World Health Organization, and the Food and Agricultural Organization back in the early 1960s. For the express purpose of establishing international food standards, and its stated purpose, which is actually quite noble, is twofold. That is to protect the health of consumers, who could argue with that, and also to eliminate international barriers in food trade, and who could argue with that either. But as you will see, and maybe as some of you already know, the stated goals are very different than the actual goals or what they've devolved into. And that's part of what we've been fighting at NHF at Codex for. Well, we've been attending where we can make a difference for about 12 years now, maybe more. And then we had a reporter attending meetings from about 1997. So it's been a good number of years now, and at first I was attending Codex as a member of the U.S. delegation when I first started in the year 2000. And then they got tired of my carping at them because the U.S. delegate was generally take the opposite position of what the National Health Federation believed in, what people who have an interest in health freedom believe in. And so they didn't allow me on the third year, which motivated me to get the National Health Federation accepted and accredited by Codex. Someone was definitely asleep at the wheel there, accredited by Codex as a recognized INGO, that is an international non-governmental organization. And that was in the year, what would that be, 2002, I believe. And that's when we first started attending a meeting where we could, as an accredited INGO, we could speak out at the meetings. We had our own microphone. We could submit written documents on important topics, even unimportant topics, and we could interact in real time with the other delegates there. If I had a question I needed to ask of the South African delegate, I didn't have to wait till a break. I could go up to her desk and talk to her there. So that gave us a lot more influence than just being a bump on a log on the U.S. or any other national delegation. And the NHF has been around for such a long period of time. We also have members in about 20 different countries, even in the UK. We have an NHF UK in Ireland. We have an NHF Ireland. There's an NHF Belgium, NHF Sweden, NHF Germany, and the list goes on. There are a number of countries where we can turn to for support. And so at Codex, what has happened, what we've found is that most of the delegates are just FDA-type bureaucrat delegates. They go to the meeting. It's a 9-to-5 job for them. And this isn't always true, but because some do passionately believe in what they're speaking about there, but generally it is true. And so you have countries literally from Albania to Zimbabwe who are represented at these meetings, and they get to speak out first on whatever topic or agenda is discussed at these meetings. Now, keep in mind, there's the Codex Alimentarius Commission that was formed in 1963, and as the years went by, it found it had too much work to be done. So it gave birth to various committees, and these committees are hosted by certain countries, like the Germans host the Codex Committee on Nutrition and Foods for Special Dietary Uses. The Canadians host the Codex Committee on Food Labeling. The Americans host the Codex Committee on Food Hygiene. The Chinese host the Codex Committee on Food Additives, also the Codex Committee on Pesticides. The Dutch host the Codex Committee on Contaminants in Food. The Swiss host the Codex Committee on Mineral Waters and Natural Waters, and so on. The list really does go on for some 27, at this point, 27 different committees. So as a recognized INGO, the National Health Federation can decide to go to any of these meetings we want to, but unfortunately we aren't a rich Fortune 500 company, so we can't go to any of these meetings. We're a nonprofit organization, and we just depend on the good graces and the goodwill of our many thousands of members, but it's still, they only pay $36 a year. So again, we always rely on donations. And what we found is a deliberate policy at these meetings, not by these particular delegates, these country delegates, because a lot of them are just as good intentioned as you or I. They just either don't know better, or they're buying into the dominant paradigm that says that, well, in the case of supplements, that supplements are harmful. In the case of GMO foods, the GMO foods are the opposite, that they are harmless, and aspartame is harmless, and aluminum-containing food additives and melamine and ractopamine are all harmless, and they go along with that. But we've been laughed at NHF when we first went to the meetings, not literally, but you could tell it when we would speak out, because we spoke to a different tune. We were telling them, warning them that melamine in infant food formula is dangerous, that ractopamine is bad, that GMO food should be labeled, that vitamin and mineral supplements need to be increased, not decreased. And we were often just slapped down. But what happened is our persistence over the years has now led to a great turnabout, which is we've had a lot of people, a lot of delegations start listening to us, coming around and actually working with us. And we've been winning some battles. And I don't know how much you want me to go into that. I can talk about that, Dr. Carley, if you like.
Yes, but before you do, first of all, I just want to say that as far as I'm concerned, the National Health Federation is one of the most important groups that all of us need to support. Because if you don't have your health, you have nothing, and you are what you eat. And before you get into the details, which I definitely want you to do, Scott, could you please explain to the listeners, how did all this get started in the first place? Where are the massive deaths from vitamin supplements, from any of the things that all of these different subgroups are handling? Where was the tsunami of deaths that occurred that got this whole thing started in the first place? Because in my opinion, that shows the fraud of their intent to begin with.
Well, I must agree with you, Dr. Carley. There is fraud there, because there were no deaths. There were no great deaths. In the last 35 years, maybe, you've had a dozen deaths from vitamins, and probably that's only by counting people who were carrying a bottle of ephedrine, walked across the street and got hit by a truck, and they counted that. You know, the problem is a lot of these... I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I'm laughing because I know you're correct. Oh. Exactly.
Yeah. Well, a lot of these people, they will... The doctors are so anti-supplement, so anti-vitamin, that even though a person who had a death was on supplements, usually just a multivitamin, but it could have been something else, they ignore that they were on all these drugs. They ignore that they were on these radical diets. They ignore that they weren't drinking enough water. They ignore that they weren't taking enough magnesium. And when the baseball player or sports player or whomever it was then keels over, then what's the first suspect? Well, they don't bring in CSI. They just immediately assume that it's, or point the finger at the supplements and ignore all the heavy drugs with all the side effects. So that's usually why it's been touted that way. In my own speeches, I show a chart, and the chart shows your risk of dying from taking supplements. And it's amazing because it shows it so graphically, so visually, because of course your highest risk is from being in an acute care hospital. The other is from being treated by a doctor or taking prescription drugs. That's way high at the list, as is smoking. Your lowest risk on the chart is you're walking along on the streets of Chicago or wherever you live, and a meteorite comes streaking out of the sky, hits you on the head, knocks you dead. And that's sort of your lowest risk. Then your third to last risk, lowest risk, is you're stung by a bee or a hornet and you keel over. Higher up the list is you fall off a horse or you're struck by lightning and you die from that. Well, guess what the second to lowest risk on that chart is? It's taking a supplement. And the absurdity of all of what they're doing, the millions and millions of dollars that they're spending to protect the consumer from maybe a few deaths over 35 years, maybe a few deaths, is absurd, and it's shown by this chart because there are no deaths. Where are the dead bodies? They really can't show them. But do they show the 120,000-plus deaths conservatively touted from drugs and doctors every year? Actually, from doctors, excuse me, from drugs it's much higher. Do they show that? They're accurate statistics from the government that show 1 million people a year die from properly licensed doctors, properly approved, FDA-approved drugs, and even from food. 5,000 people a year die from food deaths, but from supplements, only a handful. And they want to spend millions on that. The flaw in their philosophy is shown by the fact that, yes, say we have 5 deaths that we can really pin it on over the last 35 years from supplements. 5, not even a dozen, but 5. Is it worth spending all those millions of dollars to increase the cost of supplements? How many people consider two hands out there making a balancing act? On one hand, you have 5 people who died, and that's very tragic, and no one wants even 5 deaths, not even 1 death. But on the other hand, balancing that, how many people will die? How many people will get very sick, even if they don't die? Because the vitamins have been made so incredibly safe, through extra rules and regulations, extra GMP, good manufacturing practices, processes, and the like, that now what would have cost $2 costs $40, and so many people turn their faces away from those supplements and don't take them because they don't even know the benefits, because you aren't allowed legally to say what the benefits are, and now the prices are higher. And now with Obamacare we have, and through the laws that were passed when Bush was president, Bush 2, that allow free prescription drugs, that now the cost, the relative cost is, do I pay a dollar for a drug that might harm me badly, but it says it will help me? Or do I pay $40 for vitamin D in a high dose that no one knows whether it will help you or not, or at least they can't say, but boy, that's 40 times more expensive than the drug. Most people are going to go with the drug, and that is the criminality in what they're doing, because they're forcing people away from the natural health care and into a disease care system, all in the name of protecting the consumer and helping the consumer. And that is criminal. And that is what we are fighting against, because people need to realize that free doesn't necessarily mean better. It doesn't even necessarily mean that it's free. Someone's paying for it with stolen money. You and I are having our money stolen to provide this free disease care that is just binding people into this system that we don't even want and we shouldn't even have.
Okay, I need to comment on a couple of things that you said. First of all, if I was you, if there are truly five people in 35 years that have died from supplements, I would be curious to know, were they taking their supplements as per label directions? Because there are some people that, you know, get it in their head that more is better, and perhaps they're taking, you know, 1,000 times the recommended dose. I would doubt that there's any deaths that have ever occurred from any supplement, as long as it's not a supplement company owned by Big Pharma, because, of course, that's happening more and more now. We're having the pharmaceutical companies buy out certain supplement companies, and then they're tweaking the formulas and adding a lot of other things in there that are perhaps deleterious. So I would question whether there's ever been any death. Ever,
well,
from any properly taken supplement.
I liked your caveat, and I liked your caveat because I would agree with you except for one small thing, and that is that unfortunately, and you actually covered it in your comment just now, is the contamination of one batch of L-tryptophan back in the 90s by the Japanese company that was using GMO product, by the way. And it did actually kill a handful of people. But that was and that led, by the way, to the L-tryptophan ban in the U.S. for a good number of years, a very long time until just, you know, a few years ago, just recently. But, it did cause deaths, but it was a manufacturing flaw. It came from using GMO product. But if you discount that one-off, event, then I do agree with you, and I think they've harped on a number of other issues where Penn tried to pin the blame on a number of other culprits when in fact they were not the culprit. It was indeed other things and not supplements. But you did actually cover the Japanese company because it was a pharmaceutical company, not a dietary supplement company that made this mistake.
And once again, what was the problem? The GMO additives. And these psychopaths, just like you said in your opening intro, you know, they're trying to tell us that GMO is fine. And, you know, this is such a fraud on the people, it just enrages me. A couple of other things I wanted to say is that you talk about the disease system. I talk about disease creation. You know, I that's how far I go, that I have had to face the fact that my profession is creating disease. Through vaccinations, they cause all the diseases under the internal medicine umbrella, and then they give their drugs, which cause nothing but side effects and cure nothing, ergo, this term, prior existing conditions. Why do we have prior existing conditions? Because Big Pharma cures nothing, and so that's a very important thing. In regards to Obamacare, I just want to mention, this is what I've been harping on ever since this whole concept got started. Obamacare covers nothing naturally. All you can do is go to the white coats and get their various big pharma treatments. If you're going to use anything natural, you have to pay out of pocket, which, of course, is why insurance was invented, because once people are paying thousands of dollars a year for their insurance, then they're going to want to do whatever insurance covers. And, of course, insurance doesn't cover anything natural. But if I could just bring you back to the question that I asked, because I'm really curious if this was ever, you know, given when they started these proceedings, why are we doing this? What is the reason that the entire world, under the World Homicide Organization, needs to start regulating supplements and food? What was their excuse? Did you ever find an answer to that question?
Well, I just parenthetically, I like what your comment was before about Obamacare, Dr. Carley, and I so agree with you on all of that you just said. Did I ever find any commentary or any basis or at least stated belief for why they are doing this? No, other than they want to protect, they say, as part of their mandate, that they want to protect the health of the consumer. And that is their whole justification. And that sort of has, in fact, led to this toxicological model being applied at the codex level by these many, you know, FDA-type bureaucrats and food technicians to natural substances that really don't need a toxicological model applied to it. Yeah, if it's a new drug or if it's a new food product like GMO foods, then you apply a toxicological model, but not something that we've evolved with or had for millennia. That is not, it's not called for at all. And we have a whole history of usage, safe usage with these products. It's just like what the FDA is trying to do domestically. But bottom line, no, I've never gotten a real justification other than, you know, the typical stuff. They want to protect the health of the consumer. But the reality is that you can see that their heads are being turned by pharmaceutical interests because that's where they're getting a lot of their information fed to them.
So I just want to underline this and put it in a bold font, that when they first, you know, struck the gavel down and their first meeting of this, you know, decades ago, they didn't stand up and say, we're having a problem. There are people dying like flies all over the world because of health supplements. They just came forth and said, we need to protect consumers from this non-existent catastrophe that's happening. And, of course, Big Pharma, their obvious goal is to not only create disease but to not cure anything because there's no money to be made from healthy people. And so that is self-evident on its face.
Yes, I do agree with you. And, you know, the sad thing about it, Dr. Carley, is that at these meetings, NHF has typically been alone. Early on, we had the South African delegate whose sister had been saved by natural treatment from cancer to help us. We had her, and it was us and NHF at the Nutrition Committee in Germany at German meetings there fighting alone, all in the early decade of the 2000s against the food supplements, the vitamin and mineral food supplements guideline that they were passing at that time or adopting at that time. And that was it, because most of these people, even the consumer organizations, which are generally leftist, they go in with this mindset that everything needs to be proven safe first, and they don't really get the picture that they're harming people more than helping people by pricing these products or even making them totally unavailable, you know, pricing them out of the hands of consumers and not allowing certain information. But people, you know, at these meetings you have the FDA type bureaucrats, then you have INGOs, and I should have said, and I'll say it now, that most of these, about 95% of them or more, are just trade organizations like the World Sugar Research Organization, the International Dairy Federation, you know, outfits like that that represent commercial interests. So they have their own little agenda. Sometimes they dovetail with ours, but mostly they don't. And then you probably have about 5 organizations that actually represent consumers. You know, like Consumers International, you have the International Baby Formula Action Network, 49th Parallel Bio Consortium, which is a Canadian-American group, and then you have the National Health Federation. But of all of these, we are the only ones that go in with the viewpoint that vitamins and supplements are inherently safe and should be allowed and should even be promoted, and that what we're trying to do here at Codex is to optimize health, not just maintain minimal health.
Okay, and once again, I want to underline the hypocrisy of the demand that supplements and anything natural be proven to be safe, while GMO foods, pesticides, the list is endless, as you said, aspartame, the precautionary principle of all these things is out the window. They are assumed safe for some mysterious reason, I'm sure it's because, you know, the agri-farms and Monsanto and various other corporate interests are behind those. For some reason, those do not have to be proven safe. In fact, they've already been proven to be not safe, but that proof is ignored, and they are allowed to go forward with no proof that they're safe, while on the other hand, anything natural is having to prove that it's safe. And let me also say that, of course, everybody knows that because of all kinds of soil depletion, and, you know, they used to rotate crops, they don't do that anymore. Even the farmers that get subsidies from the government, they have to follow certain rules and regulations that actually lead to not as healthy food. So, of course, the need for supplements now is even more gigantic. And isn't it strange how now that we have food that's actually less nutritious than it used to be, now the supplements that could help offset that depletion of various minerals and vitamins and such that occur, all of a sudden now the supplements are the problem and not the fact that the food has been harvested and grown in a way that's not good for health.
Right. Well, I have to say that's very well put, and I agree with what you just said. And this is what we fight at the Codex meeting. But the funny thing is that for the last 3 years, maybe longer, but we have had increasing support at Codex meetings. You know, it's really kind of funny. People are actually hearing our message. Just by way of example, on the melamine issue, melamine is a contaminant in food. And you may, your listeners, that is, I know you already know this, Dr. Carley, but your listeners may not know, but years ago it was put by the Chinese into cat and dog food, because when you would test cat and dog food for protein content, you use a nitrogen measuring device, and melamine is very high in nitrogen. So by adding this cheap pennies for a pound filler, the Chinese who were doing this could bump up the protein content, make it look like there was high protein content in the cat and dog food, and they'd make more money. Well, real clever, until it killed over 100,000 cats and dogs in North America. And then they put a stop to that. Then it was put into infant baby formula for the same reason. Babies were hardier, I guess, because it didn't kill as many of them, only 100 or so, but it was still sickened many more, but it was still a bad event. So here it's used as a pesticide, an herbicide, excuse me. It's used to coat cooking equipment. It's also used in dinnerware, you know, it's a kind of plateware that you can throw on the floor and it won't break, or they line countertops with it, but that's probably its most inert use. But the worst use of all, besides the herbicidal use, is that it actually is sprayed onto the inside of these aseptic packaging, packages that are used for liquids. And then, of course, it migrates into the drink or into the food, especially if it's acidic, and we consume it. So at the 2009 Codex Committee on Contaminants in Food meeting in Holland, NHF was the only lone voice speak up against melamine. Codex, to its credit, was outlawing the deliberate introduction into the food supply of melamine. However, it was allowing a certain level to be present because of its use in, you know, cooking equipment, food processing equipment, the herbicide that's sprayed, by the way, on mushrooms, so that has a high content, and then also on the packaging. So we were the lone voice. We were shouted down in 2009, again in 2010. But by 2011, there was a coalition of Hispanic women from Central America primarily, and Northern and South America, Nicaragua and Costa Rica, the Costa Rican delegate in particular. And they must have been talking together in Spanish, because suddenly NHF had a lot of support from these women delegates there. Especially when it came to the fact of doing the you know, infant baby formulas and the impact on that. So it was really nice and confirming to get this kind of support, but we still lost. There weren't enough. So they sent this standard up that allowed a huge exemption for melamine migration from packaging and in liquid infant baby formulas. And they sent it up to the commission. Now, when it goes through each guideline before it's adopted goes through an 8-step process, and then it gets adopted by the committee, and then it's sent up to the commission itself, the parent body, for final approval and adoption, which is almost pro forma at that stage, by the way. So we had lost just last year, last spring, spring 2011, that is, and it went up to the commission in July of 2011, and we fought it there. Well, by this time, we had the support of some African delegations as well, and we were so vocal about it, and NHF had so harshly trashed the chairwoman from the previous year's meeting over a different issue on ractopamine, that she treated us much more kindly this way, this last year, and so she referred it back down to the committee. Well, just this last March, we won on that issue entirely. We just beat them so badly that even the chairman supported us, even the Australian delegate who had been pushing for the exemption to allow migration of melamine into infant baby formula from the packaging. He even rolled over and said nothing, or was it a she? I don't recall now, but in any event, they even acquiesced, and we won. That exemption was totally eliminated, and it was a huge victory for us. So this is just one example of what's been going on at the Codex meetings lately.
Well, all I have to say is it's a good thing for them that I don't go to these meetings, because I would be on a rampage. First of all, it's self-evident to me that we have two levels. We have the obvious introduction of melamine, and then we have the stealth introduction. I'm so glad you brought up the melamine dinnerware and bakeware and things of that nature. I see that advertised all the time. And they're always pushing microwave. Now, of course, if you take one of those products and put it in a microwave, we know that the melamine is going to be released into the food. So if they can't get it through in an obvious introductory fashion, they're going to use a stealth fashion. And how could these people that are pushing it possibly keep, you know, pushing for their exemption? What is this about exemptions? I mean, how come the poisons are all looking to be exempted, but the good things are all looking to be regulated and forced to be tested in a way that will make them, you know, not even able to be afforded by the consumer? I mean, this is a fraud on its face. If I was there, this is what I would be addressing, you know, the big picture of the whole thing. How come all the bad stuff's trying to be exempted and all the good stuff you're trying to put all kinds of roadblocks in where people can't afford it? You know, that's, well, in my opinion, where it needs to be addressed on the big picture level.
Well, that's funny, Dr. Carley, because that's the way we started out and we still continue it. And, you know, they don't ever see the big picture, unfortunately. We have some allies on some issues, like the GMO labeling, even huge allies like the European Union, Russia, China on the GMO labeling. And interestingly enough, our big opponents there are the Canadian and U.S. governments, the Mexican government, the Brazilian government, basically all your Western Hemispheric states are against us. But the fact of the matter is we can say the big picture till we're blue in the face, and it really gets you nowhere at the Codex meeting. And what has gotten us is working on the basic issues like this melamine and corralling allies along the way as we do it. And that's where we've had some real impact, like on ractopamine, on the nutrient reference values, which we stopped cold at the Dusseldorf meeting in 2009. These were going to dumb down the vitamin levels on nutrient reference values, which is just the new name for recommended daily intake or recommended daily dietary intake or recommended daily allowance. But now they call them NRVs. Like vitamin C, for example, 100% of your daily requirement is a mere 60 milligrams, right? You smoke one cigarette and you destroy that much in as many minutes. And with their way of thinking, this sort of Brave New World way of thinking that they have at the Codex meeting, they thought that was too much. It needs to be reduced to 45 milligrams. Can you imagine that?
Right, right, because people are dying on the streets from vitamin C overdose. I mean,
yeah.
I'm jumping out of my chair here. This is just so enraging. I want to bring out another supplement, if I could, vitamin D.
Sure.
Many people are found to be vitamin D deficient. The white coats are even doing vitamin D tests in people, okay? So they're telling people to wear sunscreen. Of course, sunscreen has chemicals in it that cause skin cancer, but they're telling people to wear the sunscreen in order to prevent skin cancer. Now, the sunscreen is also preventing the sun getting into your skin and producing vitamin D. So, you know, when you understand the situation and you see the big picture, and then, you know, people are being found to be vitamin D deficient, of course, you know, they don't put it together the way I have. But, you know, I'm just waiting to see where they're going to put out some kind of a warning that people are overdosing themselves on vitamin D3. You know, it's so obvious to me. And I hope, yes. You know, obviously the Western companies, countries are totally controlled by these corporations. They just, you know, put, you know, fistfuls of money into the pockets of the quote-unquote public servants that are in the governments of these countries. Hopefully the other countries, whose people are dying from lack of what they need, will stand forth and join forces with you big time until it's self-evident to everybody that the toxins are given exemptions and the good things are being, you know, basically, you know, driven down in terms of exposure. What did you say? They want to get 35 milligrams a day of vitamin C? I mean,
It's a joke. And guess what, Dr. Carley, when I pressed the Australian delegate on this point, because in 2009 they brought up these standards, standards actually set the numbers, guidelines set the general principles. So at Codex level you'll have standards and you'll have guidelines. So these were the standards that they were proposing for it. And I saw them during a break on a sheet that was fairly innocuous looking, but when I read it closely, I saw what they were getting at. And the chairman for the committee will let the country delegates speak first, then the INGOs. Well, Costa Rica spoke up and they were lowering, vitamin A levels, the vitamin A NRV from 800 micrograms down to 550. And she just said, "We think it ought to stay there. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Sat down." Well, I had pushed the button to be heard. This is at the 2009 Dusseldorf meeting. And I thought, well, I still had 10 minutes before I'd be called on because there would be all these other countries speaking ahead of me, at least 10 minutes. No, I was called on next. There was no one else going to speak up. If I hadn't pushed my button, it would have just gone on to adoption, to further it down the track to adoption. And that would have been it. But I started out because I knew the chairman was so publicity conscious about his committee, this is the nutrition committee, that I said, this is ridiculous. This is going to be a public relations nightmare for this committee. We'll be the laughing stock of the world if these things are reduced down. That's how I started out. And then I argued they should be moved upwards, not downwards, and for reasons that you and I have discussed on this show already, Dr. Carley. But in any event, that led to a retort from the Australian delegate and some others, and I, pretty much holding the fort alone, went back and forth with them for nearly an hour. The only two voices of support that I got were, believe it or not, from the Iraqi delegate, whom I had befriended there. He spoke up and said, "We support the views of NHF." And then at the most critical moment, the Indian delegation said, This standard should be held back for further consideration, and we agree with the National Health Federation. And their timing was absolutely impeccable, because just at that moment, the chairman, who could have sent it either way, agreed with us and said, "We're holding it back." So we killed the momentum at that meeting, and it still hasn't recovered its momentum. At the 2010 meeting in Chile, it didn't go forward. We had more allies, and it was stopped dead. 2011 meeting in Germany, again, it was stopped. Now, in 2012, this year's meeting, which will be held somewhere in Germany, it will come up again for discussion, and this time it'll be the climactic battle because they want to plug the numbers in. And this is where we need to stop them. And if any of your listeners have any special expertise in arguing on this point, I would urge them to contact me, because we're putting together our written papers now for submission in plenty of time for that meeting, and we want to make good arguments. Even if the listener's hot button topic is only one of those nutrients, like vitamin A, they want to lower vitamin B complex, they want to lower the B vitamins except for folate, vitamin C, vitamin D, magnesium they want to lower while concomitantly raising calcium, that's madness. Fluoride they want to leave alone at its own high level, curiously enough. And by the way, when I confronted the Australian delegate on the House, she arrived at 45 milligrams. Guess what she said, Dr. Carley? She said, oh, well, that's the halfway point between total tissue saturation and scurvy. And I asked her, so you mean you're picking the halfway point between optimal health and death? You know, that's your compromise? I mean, that is absolutely insane. And that's what I said. And I talk like that at these meetings, you know. This is not, they try to speak real diplomatically. They try to sugarcoat their words. And we speak very differently at these meetings. And we tell them they're idiots if they are. But maybe we pull a punch and don't call them idiots, but we come close to saying that. So they know that's the word mean.
Well, I want to give you a suggestion. You can say that they're thyroid hormone deficient, and that's a nice way of calling them cretin, okay?
Oh,
that's
I like that.
That's what we used to do when we would do our rounds in medicine. You know, we would basically state that somebody was thyroid hormone deficient, and that sent the word out to the rest of the crew that are cretins, and we would all laugh, you know, onto this.
That's funny. I like that. Well, I've been using the word stercoraceous, which most people don't know means having dung-like qualities. And so it's a way to tell them that they are, the S word without actually saying it. You're using another S word.
Right. They are traitors to humanity. That's what I would call these people. When you mentioned, I forget which minion was saying that a certain level should be accepted because it was believed. They believe it. Since when does belief come into science, okay? Let's get rid of belief. We need to scientifically prove that something is safe or something is toxic. And we have so many things I still want to discuss with you, but I'm outraged at this idea of exemption. Exemption equals immunity. It's the same thing that happens with all the corrupt actors in governments all over the world. They say that they're immune, you know, just like Obama, just, you know, executive privilege, you know, we're not going to release proof that our government is allowing, you know, guns to be bought to kill people, and it's all just a game so that we can continue to fund all of our different military whatevers for situations that we create. How do they even, bring forth this idea of an exemption? How come toxins can be exempt, but yet supplements have to be proven to be safe, when in fact no supplement has ever been proven to not be safe if used as prescribed on the label? That's what I would like to know. This is what's really getting me outraged, that they're able to even bring that up. The idea of an exemption for GMO, for pesticides, for any of the other crap that they're promoting to be, you know, unleashed upon the world in violation of the precautionary principle. This is one of the main things that I rave about all the time, the precautionary principle, where you have to prove that a chemical or anything is safe. before it's released upon the public. We have basically abandoned the precautionary principle, and we now have even the EPA saying, rather than a company prove that something's safe before they unleash it on the public has to prove it's deleterious after it's unleashed. And how do you do that? Well, you have to bring a class action suit. You know, that would mean untold amounts of money having to be paid by who? Members of the public that are willing to come forward and get involved? It's insane. It's insane. Yeah. Go ahead.
No, it absolutely is, and we see it time and time again. And a lot of these bureaucrats are in this mentality that, well, just so long as no deaths occur on their watch that are directly attributable to an approved product, then they're doing okay. And that's part of the reason that so many people are being harmed. As Dirk Pearson and Sandy Shaw pointed out years ago, the FDA is responsible for more deaths in this country than all the wars that the United States has fought from the American Revolutionary War to the present.
Exactly.
And that's part of the problem. You know, people get in this mentality to think that you have to have people in control who will protect the public. And in fact, what happens is the exact opposite. It's called the law of unintended consequences. The government is incapable of truly protecting the public. And people still buy this myth that the government does that, and they don't. The government doesn't. It's incapable of it, and it causes more harm than good.
Well, I would go even farther with that. It's not that they're incapable of protecting us. It's that they're selling their souls for cash, and they're actually accepting money from all these agricultural groups, especially Monsanto and Big Pharma, and doing what they're doing. They know what they're doing. This is not stupidity. This is not naivete. This is intentional wrongdoing because they're being paid to do it. These are crimes against humanity. That's the level I would bring it to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I couldn't agree more. I could not agree more.
Okay, so go ahead and finish off on whatever you want to say, but I also want to talk about Dick Durbin, one of my non-favorite members of, the traitors in the District of Criminals, and mm-hmm. how hard he's trying to, force us to not be able to get supplements. And also, we need to discuss this NDI guidance. And all the things that you've been successful, your organization. And once again, I want to please implore people to support the National Health Federation, the work that they're doing. And obviously, it takes money to go to all these meetings and do everything that they're doing. And there's many other groups that are purporting that they're fighting Codex when in reality they're not. And in my opinion, the National Health Federation is the group that's doing what they have to do. And although I wish I could be, a pit bull that you carry around with you, to go after these monsters, I don't know how you maintain your composure when these things are happening. I know you have to be diplomatic, but to me it's so obvious the real intention of these psychopaths.
Yeah, well, it's true. There are just a lot of misguided people there too. You can't be too angry at some of them. They think they're doing the right thing, but they're just enablers, and they're enabling the ones who do have the bad intentions to succeed, or at least to get what they want. But generally, I mean, for example, and I appreciate what you said just then, Dr. Carley, because we do need support. We are in a rich organization, and in fact, the only reason that I was able to be at that 2009 Dusseldorf meeting was because one of our Irish NHF members sent in a $1,000 contribution that paid for my trip there. And enabled me to go to the meeting and attend, and but for that I wouldn't have been there. He's actually the real unsung hero of the whole event, and yet people don't realize that they can be part of these kind of victories by helping keep us in the field. And that's what happens. You know, there are a number of other organizations out there and they talk up a good story, but, you know, frankly, they aren't doing anything at Codex. We are. And yet they're siphoning off money that could help us support. I didn't go to the Codex Committee on Food Additives meeting in China this year as I did the previous year because we didn't have the funds to do it. So I didn't go.
Wait a minute. Okay. That outrages me. Okay. We just had reported in the mainstream media this week there was a grossly overweight woman in Greece, New York, who was being heckled by seventh graders on the school bus because she was fat. And she actually received $600,000 in donations over a 36-hour period. This shows the mentality of Americans, okay? They're going to send money to this woman who was heckled by seventh graders, and they're not supporting the National Health Federation. Where is Hollywood in this? These minions, we have, you know... what's her name? Angelina Jolie. Right. She's basically going around the world and promoting immunizations. We have to get money for immunizations of the children of Africa, which are killing them. Okay. Are there any Hollywood types that have more money than they know what to do with that could possibly actually help to do what you're doing, to promote what you're doing, which is going to save the lives of their children? What's up with that?
Well, you just suggested to NHF its next marketing campaign. I think we're going to send some obese person onto a city bus and see what we can gain from that. Or maybe we can find a mouse in a Coca-Cola can or something and make our millions of dollars, you know. And then support our activities. But in the more immediate term, if someone will just go to our website, thenhf.com, and you can sign up on our email list, and you can also join. It's only $36 a year, and if you care to kick in a donation to help us go to these meetings and keep going, like the upcoming one in Germany that's coming up this November, December, then thank you from the bottom of my heart.
Well, they should be thanking you, Scott. I mean, what you're doing, and especially the fact that you're an attorney, I have to say. You know, I don't hold attorneys in general in high regard, and to find an attorney with a conscience is a miracle in itself. But they're not... They're not helping you. They're helping themselves. They're helping the future of the human race. I mean, this to me, you know, the immunization thing is another example of the same obvious situation where, you know, vaccines, which are bioweapons, are being promoted as the best thing since sliced bread in the medical community, and they're actually bioweapons. But, you know, even if you have the knowing that vaccines are bad, if you don't have the ability to protect yourself with good food and supplements to supplement the food that even though it's good, it's not being grown in healthy soil and other things due to chemtrails and pesticides. I actually covered on my show yesterday these fire retardants that are being sprayed all over nature are also pesticides. It's just amazing that any of us are healthy. But this is the most important thing, in my opinion, is that the people have to see the very extensive corruption. I mean, this goes to the heart of it, where, like I said, these exemptions are given for bad things, but the good things have to prove that they're actually safe, when in fact they're not only safe, they're good. As you mentioned prior, supplement companies, they're not allowed to make claims for what their supplements can do. As a matter of fact, one of the most hilarious, although really sick, examples of this I found out about a couple of months ago is that in Europe now, water is not allowed to be advertised as a solution for dehydration. If that's not the ultimate insanity, I don't know. Go ahead.
No, that is absurd. It's absolutely absurd. And what we found a lot of times, not everyone, but most of the people at the Codex meetings are not capable of having an adult conversation about nutrition. They just either don't know, or they don't care,
or their
minds are so full. Yeah, thank you. I should have said that first. You are right. So it's one of those, and their heads are so full of this other nonsense that they can't see their way straight to get out of the box that they find themselves in, or that they are in. They may not find themselves in it, but they are in it. So it's just a sad state of affairs. But our repeated messages over the last 15 years have really been having an impact, and we find more and more allies at these Codex meetings. So time will tell, but the basic thing is that the people with the negative agenda, with the bad agenda, are still going to push it through. When the tire meets the road, that is their goal, is to get their mission of ill health fulfilled. And that's the sad thing about it all. We just need to wake up enough people to stop that from happening.
Is there any way during the presentation of these various situations, especially the exemption thing, that's what really angers me, outrages me, where you could stand up and you know, take out your gavel and say, intention to destroy humanity here, or crimes against humanity, let's, you know, shuffle this off to the hay. I'm being facetious, of course. But the point is that as far as I'm concerned, the precautionary principle, that's the main thing that has to be highlighted here. How are these people even allowed to stand up and promote their obviously psychopathic agendas in order to prevent us from having health? Most people don't even know what it is to be healthy, because they've never been healthy, because of all the situations that we encounter every day, being plagued with poisons and not having access to good food, good water, whatever, good air especially. So how come there's not some kind of, and I already know the answer to this question, because this whole creation was created by the minions that have their agenda. But how come there's not a way to just stop the proceedings cold when some insane proposal is made by those who wish to actually support disease?
Probably because this disease system has been in place for so long as sort of the dominant paradigm that people don't recognize it for what it is. You know, it's the way, you know, when people used to think that the universe circled around the earth instead of the way it really is, that it's just, they're stuck in that. I think let's hope sooner than this, but certainly in 50 years time, 100 years time, people look back on them and laugh and think, how silly could that possibly have ever been? But in the near future, in the present, we're faced with a situation where they're trying to make us ill, trying to harm us, are harming us, in fact, by keeping information away from people and by keeping healthy products away from us on the one hand, and on the other hand, pushing their bad concoctions on us and making us sick, either through toxins, chemicals, through bad food, like you said, very badly depleted food. I mean, the nutrient content of our foods has gone down 50% in the last 50 years. Our grandparents ate better nutritionally dense food than we do now, unless you eat organically, and even then it's suspect because of all the toxins in the air.
Well, not only that, but how can you have organic food when you're being sprayed with chemtrails to begin with?
So exactly.
So the whole situation is just so difficult to ponder in terms of the solutions, but once again, I'll say that your organization must be supported. I look at you as a light in the darkness, and I'm hoping that you will be able, in every different meeting that you attend, which you must attend all these meetings, and people, you must support the National Health Federation so that Scott can attend these meetings, from what he's saying, you know, he knows what's going on. He may be more diplomatic than me because I'm not known for my diplomacy, but he knows what's going on. And what we have to do is get these people who are on the edge, you can call them, you know, uninformed. I know that most of them are sellouts, but if they can get a hold of the idea that their lives, their children's lives, the very lives of the future of humanity are at stake here, maybe they will say to themselves, you know what, I'm not going to promote this crap anymore. I am not going to allow this to happen. We could turn this whole thing around. We could make this this codex thing actually based on the precautionary principle. We're going to cancel all exemptions. We're going to allow supplement companies to do whatever they're doing. Unless there's a problem, let us know the massive deaths that are occurring from whatever supplements being sold. And by the way, if it's a pharmaceutical company making the supplement, then that's going to be addressed as well. But we want the people promoting GMO, fluoride, aspartame, all these other things, it's time for them to prove that their products are safe. Imagine what would happen. We could turn this around in a heartbeat.
Yeah, that is so true. Excuse me. And I just, the sad thing is so many of these people, particularly in the FDA or at Codex level, you know, they think, well, how did Hemingway put it? And he put it, how simple it is when one knows nothing. And so many of them, when it comes to nutrition, they know nothing. And they think they know something, but it's all so simple. So they try to suppress it. So that's what we need to stop. And like you said, the support is there. And I think we're making the inroads, and we will make the inroads, and they can't continue doing what they're doing because the information is getting to be absolutely overwhelming of the benefits of vitamin mineral supplements, of nutritionally dense foods over nutritionally light foods, of avoiding toxins that will tax your system, and the like. So it is important, and it is, and we will start seeing even more victories, I think, in the future, not without a fight and not without valuable support from your listeners and our NHF members, but we will prevail. And that sort of leads to the domestic situation too. I don't know if you want to talk about your good friend Dick Durbin.
I was just going to suggest we start talking about him, but before we do, I just want to make my usual sarcastic comment. I would love to be a fly on the wall during these meetings. How many of the people that are promoting the agenda of the wrongdoers, you know, weigh 300, 400 pounds, they're getting out their inhalers during the breaks and things of that nature?
Oh, no, you really hit the nail on the head with that one, Dr. Carley, because, yeah, you would be amazed. Some of them go out and then drink their Diet Cokes or whatever, and it is absolutely amazing. And in 1 week's time, I go to the Codex Alimentarius Commission meeting in Rome in Italy, and we'll be dealing with ractopamine, which is a steroid contaminant. I call it a contaminant. They call it just a vet drug that the Canadians, Americans, and, again, most of the Western Hemispheric states give to their animals before slaughter so that they'll have a sort of more bodybuilder's physique, and they can sell more, sell the animals for $3 or $4 a carcass more. And yet it's prohibited in 160 different countries. We're going to have a big fight over that again, just like we did last year. And NHF will be in the thick of that. That's in 1 week's time.
Okay, I need to give you more truth for your armamentarium as you approach that, because this is very important, that what you need to know. Steroids actually shut down the adrenal glands. Any exogenous introduction of steroids, and steroids are given pharmaceutically for everything you can imagine. All the vaccine-induced diseases are actually caused by a corruption of the immune system due to vaccines, and steroids are what they give to people for everything you can imagine. But one of the side effects of steroids, and this is also going to be true for steroids given to you know, farm-based animals that are then slaughtered, is that those steroids that are eaten are actually going to shut down the adrenal glands of the person eating them. So that's another very important point that you have to know. See, there's many layers to this agenda. And the adrenal glands are the primary glands that deal with stress, and all of us have tremendous amounts of stress in our bodies. But if you're taking in all these steroids from the outside, your adrenal glands are going to be shut down, and that is potentially fatal. So I just wanted to mention that. But, yes, let's get into one of my non-favorite people in the Senate, Dick Durbin. I don't know if anybody's done the research to see how many pharmaceutical companies are stuffing money into his back pocket. But in your investigations, what have you found in terms of why is he one of the primary minions that's trying to stop the Shea? Of course, you'll need to describe what the Shea is. And thankfully, we have Senators Harkin and Hatch who are at least standing up against what he's trying to do. And this was one of your many victories that you actually were able to succeed in because the Durbin Amendment, number 2127, to SB 3187, to reauthorize the FDA prescription drug and medical device user fees, failed on the Senate floor, primarily due to what you were educating the public on. But what's up with this guy Durbin? Why is he doing this? Have you found any smoking guns in terms of the money that's being sent to him? What can we do to unelect this guy?
Well, unfortunately, he's a Democrat in a state that's very heavily Democrat. And, you know, it's important to keep in mind people, you know, I'm not a Republican or a Democrat, but people trash the Republicans, but it's actually the Democrats who are consistently and repeatedly and continuously anti-supplement, anti-natural health care. You get a few bright lights in the sky, like maybe Kucinich from Ohio, but he's looked at as a kook by even his own Democratic colleagues. But the fact of the matter is that the Democrats are our biggest enemies when it comes to supplements and health freedom in general. We are consistently having to fight them, and it's not because we love the Republicans anymore, because a lot of them are just as bad, but it's just that these people are so incredibly in the pockets, the Democrats, of the pharmaceutical companies, it's not even funny. And yes, we did, I'm sorry I don't have our lobbyist, Lee Bechtel on this program, at least for a short while, because he could probably give you the actual numbers, but we did track it on his, you know, what he's getting, donations from, pharmaceutical companies, from Big Pharma, but I don't have those numbers at hand right now, and
it's massive, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah, it's absolutely massive, and the fact of the matter is that he, you know, also gets money from PACs and the like, and a lot from these financial groups that are, and even, I hate to say it, lawyers as well, that are contributing massive amounts of money to him. But, you know, let's look at his track record, since I can't be too helpful on the financial contribution other than to say, yes, a lot from pharmaceutical companies. But, you know, in the last, let's say, 7 years, 9 years, he's made 11 attempts to do an end run around the Dietary Supplement Health and Education Act, and you asked that I speak about what it is. And the Dietary Supplement Health and Education Act is a law that was passed in October 1994, and it wasn't a perfect law like some people think. Some people think it's like, you know, the Bible or something, and it's perfect. No, it isn't. It was a compromise law. So it has some bad things about it, but most of the things about it are good. And it was a watershed law, and the reason it came about is because in 1990, Congress had passed the Nutritional Labeling and Education Act that gave yet more powers to the FDA to declare whatever it wanted to declare, in the supplement and dietary supplement areas as food additives, you know, and subject to all sorts of expensive safety testing, all of that, which make all the supplements and any combination of supplements subject to the arbitrary whims of an FDA bureaucrat or set of bureaucrats. Well, you know, we could see what was going on at that time, and I was involved at that time as well. We thought it was outrageous. And so a whole group of people, the National Health Federation, other organizations, a guy named Joe Bassett, who just died, was one of the spearheading figures. He just died earlier this month in Ohio. He was a key figure. He was on our board of governors and also on the board of some other organizations like Citizens for Health. And he helped lead, spearhead this movement that resulted in the unanimous passage of DSHE, which is just the acronym for Dietary Supplement Health and Education Act, that passed on October 15th, 1994. Well, what are some of the bad parts of DSHE? Well, some are that in the law they declared as part of the compromise with the Democrats, by the way, the Democrats you can thank for this. October 15th, 1994 was declared as the watershed date, the passage date, for old dietary supplements versus, and you put quote marks around the word new dietary supplements. So anything on the market before that was grandfathered in, deemed to be automatically safe. Anything after that, manufacturers have to provide notice to the FDA. It's a notification process, notice to the FDA that they're going to introduce the product, and then the FDA has a certain period of time to respond and say, no, you can't unless you prove that it's safe. And typically they don't do that. Typically also a lot of manufacturers don't even know about or care to submit a new dietary ingredient or an NDI notification. So a lot have not. Well, in 1994 this seemed like a reasonable compromise, but here we are 17, 18 years nearly later, and what's happened? We probably have more than 20,000 products out there with new dietary ingredients in them. This includes like ubiquinol, coenzyme Q10, L-GABA, bioperine, resveratrol, a whole bunch of products that are quite lucrative in the marketplace and quite healthy for consumers that are out there that are just prime for being targeted by the FDA. Now, under DSHE, they should be safe, but what the FDA did last summer, that is in July 2011, is bring out what's known as a guidance document or a guidance for industry on NDIs, new dietary ingredients, in which they sort of turned DSHE on its head, contravened the intent of DSHE, and said, well, this is not a notification process. You now have to prove that your supplements, your new supplements, that is any introduced into the marketplace on October 15th, 1994 or later, you have to prove that they're safe. Well, you know, a lot of these supplements aren't worth the cost of that. It's going to cost hundreds of thousands of dollars at the cheapest, maybe millions in the others. And the FDA was also saying, we don't care if company A proved it safe. Company B also has to prove it safe for the same exact identical ingredient. Can you believe that? What nonsense is that?
Yes, I can believe that because their obvious agenda of creating disease and promoting disease is self-evident in all of this. And, of course, let's not forget that the government actually gives, you know, millions of dollars of different grants to the pharmaceutical industry to create their toxic poisons. And once they unleash a drug on the population, they don't have to pay back that money. They just, you know, proceed forward in accruing the profits from unleashing the drugs on the public. So it's self-evident, the agenda that's afoot here. And that's what people have to realize because, of course, anything natural can't be patented. That's what people have to realize. If you have a supplement that's made from nature, you can't patent that because it's natural. And so the companies that make these supplements, they aren't in the same category in terms of profits as the pharmaceutical companies. So that puts them at a very big deficit in terms of, you know, dealing with the FDA that has its obvious agenda to begin with.
Yes. Well, I know I took us a bit astray from the Dick Durbin thing because this is something that FDA did, not Dick Durbin directly. However, interestingly enough, it does dovetail into the Dick Durbin legislation, and even the trade industry organization called the Council for Responsible Nutrition, they are the ones we have to blame for this because they shot themselves and all the rest of us, they shot themselves in the foot and all the rest of us in the head by suggesting in the food FDA Food Safety Modernization Act that the requirement be put in there that the FDA within 180 days has to come out with an FDA guidance on new dietary ingredients, which is exactly what we would have told CRN don't do. And afterwards, after they came out of that meeting in which that language was inserted in the law, most of the others turned to him and said, what kind of an idiot were you to have done that? Because you've just invited the FDA to come out with the worst document in the world, and that's exactly what happened. Now we're having to fix the industry's mess because they were so incredibly stupid as to have done this. So what are we doing? NHF introduced a bill in the House last fall, early in the fall, called H.R., well, given the number, H.R. 3380. And it's called the Dietary Supplement Protection Act. And it's an idea I had while I was at the Codex meeting in Geneva last year, and I heard of what the FDA had done. I thought of this. And what our bill does, it's not a cure-all. It's not a panacea for all the ills of the FDA guidance document, by the way. But it is a quick and politically expedient way of temporarily fixing the problem, fixing it for a good number of years. What our bill does is it simply says, okay, you're going to play that game, FDA. We're going to take that date of October 15, 1994, and change it to January 1, 2007, so that now that becomes the watershed date. Anything before that is grandfathered in, not subject to the notification or safety approval process. Anything after that, sure, it's a notification process, but not before. It's very simple. It just in Deshaies, it changes the date everywhere it appears from October 15, 1994 to January 1, 2007. Now, why that date? I wanted it later. I wanted it in 2009. But the representative, Dan Burton, and his staff, they decided that the 2007 date ties in to some new requirements with GMP regulations, the good manufacturing practice regulations, and the adverse event reporting requirements so as to justify it a new date. In other words, supplements today are even safer than they were in 1994 because now they're subject to good manufacturing practices and to adverse event reporting requirements so that they are being held to an even higher standard than in 1994. And those all kicked in on January 1, 2007. So what they're doing is they're tying it into that. Either way, it helps us. The problem is there are only a handful of health freedom organizations that are supporting this bill, and we need more help. So if people would go to our website, thenhf.com, click on the government affairs button, and go to federal, then click on the federal button, and you'll see a discussion about this. H.R. 3380, and it even gives a sample letter. Send it into your congressional representative and help us get more co-sponsors to pass this bill. We need it passed. Right now, there are some who are trumpeting, oh, we don't need to do that because the FDA just announced that it is going to revise its FDA, its draft guidance document. Well, you know, actually, I guess I can't say it on this, but the words I would say would be very expletive deleted. But so what? You know, where were they for 17 years? They should have been asking the industry's help and not putting up this kind of nonsensical document. Where were they even before this document was drafted? They should have consulted the industry. Now they want to throw a few crumbs to the industry, and the industry is gullible enough to want to snap up the crumbs and say, oh, they're talking to us now. Don't pass a bill because they're talking. Boy, what saps are these people?
Well, two comments I want to make. First of all, as far as I'm concerned, there should be no date given in terms of the grandfathering thing. Once again, let's get to the precautionary principle versus proof of toxicity. Why can't things be turned around on these minions that are obviously having an agenda to allow, you know, the continuation of disease and the prevention of the natural things that we need? Let them prove that the products are toxic. Why did the supplement companies have this, to do? And as you said, how ridiculous that if one supplement company proves something is safe, it doesn't, go over to the next supplement company. They can't use that proof. How obvious can it be what their agenda is? So, as far as I'm concerned, it should be basically an ongoing thing. Let Big Pharma, let the FDA, same thing. Let them prove that something is toxic in order to prevent something from being let onto the market. That's first of all. And the other thing I would mention is in terms of what's going on with the health food stores. I am so outraged. Once again, I'm living in outrage on a daily basis. There's two vitamin stores, health food stores, whatever, that I frequent on a regular basis. I talk to them all about this all the time, about supporting your organization. And it's amazing that, you know, they have this attitude, well, until, you know, they bring down the boot. You know, they're waiting until the boot is brought down. They don't even realize that their very survival is at stake. And, of course, this in the big picture of all these things, you know, as we're talking about how our economy is in a intentional depression / recession, whatever, all the companies all over the country that are selling natural supplements, they're in danger of being shut down. And we've already had many examples of SWAT teams going to raw milk places and other things, shutting them down. But they don't even care enough to help your organization stop what's obviously going on. They're just sitting back and saying, oh, others are taking care of it, so I'm not going to get involved. And that's criminal, in my opinion.
Yeah. That is so true. Well, I have to say, I agree with you on the point where you made that there shouldn't even be a date in Deshaies. That's part of what I was saying, that Deshaies was a compromised document, and there are parts of it that are not good at all. But in the political world, to eliminate the date entirely by trying to pass legislation, H.R. 3380, it just wouldn't be politically feasible. So we did the next best step, and that is to advance the date. And by doing that, we also would set the precedent for some time in the future, advancing it yet again, or, God willing, even be able to eliminate it. So that's sort of the strategy behind it all.
Yeah, you're dancing with psychopaths, so I understand why you're doing what you're doing. But please address what I just said. Why aren't health food stores standing behind you? I am outraged by that fact. They're basically, I look at them as like parasites, you know. They're basically saying, well, we're not shut down yet, so we're not going to really act proactively. We're not going to do anything because until we're shut down. And, of course, once you're shut down, the effort and money involved in reversing that situation is massive. I don't understand why they don't get it. Why aren't people that own health food stores and vitamin shops and things of that nature, why aren't they behind you? This is insane.
Well, you know, in fairness to them, some health food stores are behind us. Some small companies actually do help us. There's a very innovative company in Western Canada that actually helps us and has been quite good at keeping us in the field. So there are some real heroes there. And, you know, our hat is off to them, but you still hit the nail on the head once again because they are too few and far between. I think a lot of them think that by supporting their trade organization, they're doing the best they can. Plus, they're listening to the disinformation of the trade organizations. One of our biggest enemies at these meetings, Codex meetings, is actually the International Alliance of Dietary Food Supplement Associations. You know, here's an organization that should be squarely on our side. Is it? No, not at all. And, in fact, during the debate back in 2004 on the vitamin mineral food supplements guideline at the Nutrition Committee in Germany, at one point the IADSA representative came up, or delegate came up to our table and said, guys, quit your opposition. You're ruining it for all of us. Those were their words to us. You're ruining it for all of us. And that's their mentality, because they want the barriers to come down internationally so they can just sell their Me Too kind of supplements, their Fred Flintstone kind of supplements that won't really help people but won't hurt them either, and sell them throughout the world and make oodles of money. And that will make them happy. But will it help people? No. Will it deal with the nutritional levels that we that we're talking about? No. So that's really the problem.
And what is your response to them when they ask you that question? I mean, as far as I'm concerned, the term self-evident comes about again. Okay, it's self-evident. Let's talk about Linus Pauling, who received a Nobel Prize in regards to the benefits of vitamin C. And now they want to put it down to 45 in terms of your, you know, daily requirement. I mean, hello, people. These organizations, dietary supplement guides, I forget whatever you mentioned, obviously they are the other side. And they name themselves, just like all these different laws, name themselves like they're protecting people. They're actually doing the exact opposite. Are you asking them hard questions in terms of what they're promoting? How are they suggesting that they're working for the consumer? It's insane. I mean, it's obvious that they're not doing that. Why don't you put them in their place and basically label them, you know, with what they're actually doing? I don't understand. I know you have to be diplomatic. I'm not capable.
Oh, well, believe me, we're known for not being diplomatic at the meeting. I mean, and we do actually. You're asking us questions, and the answer to them is we are. We are not known for being diplomatic at these meetings. Everyone tells us that, in fact. Sometimes we will be, but if there's like a borderline possible ally, but I mean, that is why at the Codex Commission meeting in Geneva in 2010, I just reamed the chairwoman so much so that the U.S. delegate, the Canadian delegate, all were outraged at the words I had to say. And then when I wrote my article, which you can still read today on our website, if you click on the Codex button and go back to July 2010, you can read that very article about that meeting. She read it, and it was harshly critical of her and harshly critical of certain other members, other delegates at that meeting. And I think that is one reason, in fact, I know it's one reason, why she treated us much more nicely at the 2011 meeting and actually helped us on two different occasions there. Really did a complete flop, so much so that when I wrote about the 2011 meeting, I wrote about her in glowing terms, not harsh terms.
Right, because, you see, that's one of the characteristics of the sellouts, psychopaths, whatever the case may be. The light of day is what they fear the most. And once they've been shown to be doing the wrong thing, and it doesn't matter what the reason is, ignorance, sellouts, whatever the case may be, they don't want to be put in the light in terms of that they're actually harming people. And so, you know, I take my hat off to you in terms of doing that. And whatever it takes, you know, whether they have to be exposed as frauds, as minions, as sellouts, or idiots, whatever it means, we need to protect our ability to get safe food and supplements. This is the very critical aspect of life itself. I mean, they're destroying our DNA with vaccines, aspartame, pesticides, all these different things. If they're not going to allow us to be able to access good food and good supplements, we have no hope. And there's nothing more important than that. That's why I'm going to keep on bringing it home. People, you need to support the National Health Federation and what they're doing, because this is so important. You have lots of other organizations. I'll just bring up National Health Solutions. I talked about this before with you off the air. Rima LeBeau and her General Stubblemine, ex-military intelligence, allegedly, that's always asking for money for this organization to go to Codex. When was the last time you saw one of them at a Codex meeting?
Probably more than 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Probably more than 2 years ago. And remember, when they would go to those meetings, they weren't and still aren't a recognized INGO. They just go as members of the public. Any one of your listeners to this program could go as a member of the public and sit up in the peanut gallery and listen, but you wouldn't be able to speak out. You wouldn't be able to attend the functions. You wouldn't be able to submit written documents. All of those require being recognized and accredited by Codex.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I just wanted to bring that out. But it's just so important what you're doing, Scott. And I feel so strongly about this. I get outraged by the insanity. I'll just bring up vaccines once again. That it's the same situation with vaccines. They've never been proven to be safe or effective. The vaccine inserts themselves tell the people they've never been tested to see if they cause cancer, because, of course, they know they cause cancer. And we live in an opposite-day world where bad things don't have to prove that they're good, but good things have to prove that they're not bad. And you can't prove that you're not bad in many cases just because of the immense financial requirements to prove that you're not bad. And, of course, you have agencies like the FDA that can come in and say, well, we're not going to accept your research. They don't have to have a basis for that. They can just do that because of massive corruption and fraud that we're dealing with. So it's so frustrating. Sometimes it just seems daunting that we will never be able to overcome this pure evil that's being put upon the world. And but I know that with organizations like yours, that, you know, you're forever fighting the good fight. And, you know, I know that truth comes out in the end, but it's just very frustrating to see how long this is taking.
Yes, it is. And I think sort of bottom line, so people don't feel excuse me, powerless, is to get control of their own, you know, their own health and their own agenda. One is, it's super important for them to listen to programs such as yours and to ignore the mainstream, or as we call it, the lamestream media. It's important for them to get their information from alternative and accurate sources of information, and then being informed to act upon such information and to do what is necessary to protect their own health and that of their family, and then taking it from there to help us, organizations like the National Health Federation, to take action to defend their rights to do just that. And I think with getting more and more people involved in, I hate to use the word proselytizing, but that's probably the best word at this point, that we will get more and more people aware, and through such awareness, we can actually prevail. So, I mean, that's part of it. It's being persistently vocal about what's out there. That's a word term I coined some years ago, persistently vocal, and not trusting the government or any information from the government or any actions by the government, because all they are enablers for those who would do us harm. In fact, often they're the direct causes of harm. And a lot of people need to wake up from this mythology that they've been inculcated with because of public education, government education, that government is good. Well, of course, government runs those schools. They're going to say good things about themselves.
Right. The government is here to help you. That's one of the most important things people should run away from. But actually, you just brought to mind a situation. Michelle Obama is now promoting community garden. She's written a book about same. I've seen her interviewed on the Food Network and all different things, and she's promoting that communities be allowed to grow organic gardens and have sustenance for their people on that basis. While at the same time, her hubby is in line with all these other organizations. They actually have written laws. They want to prohibit people from growing their own gardens and things of that nature. So there's so much disinfo being put out there by people like Michelle Obama, that alleges she wants to make the children healthy. What a scam. It's all a scam. And that's what people have to realize. Go ahead.
No, I like your choice of words, Dr. Carley. It is a scam, and it's one, unfortunately, that so many people have bought into. And with increasing control, which we have to be careful of, over the not just the mainstream media, which is controlled, but and just full of anti-natural product propaganda, but it is, unfortunately, some of these supplement companies are being snapped up by the drug companies. For example, Capsugel in California, it's been bought by Pfizer. This makes the soft gel capsules. They see the handwriting on the wall in terms of where the market is heading, and they want to buy up the competition, and that's what they're doing with their big money.
Well, not only that, and that's why I always tell people, when I do consults for people, I have no financial interaction with any companies. I experiment on myself and my pets. I take things myself. I research who actually owns the companies, because this is happening more and more, where Big Pharma is buying out companies that have excellent supplements, and they're adding titanium dioxide and all kinds of other things, steroids that are actually very deleterious to health. And that's why people have to realize, just because you're getting a supplement from a health food store doesn't mean it's good. You have to research who owns the company, because you're not going to be told that on the label. And it's daunting what we have to do in order to protect our health, but especially to realize that if Michelle Obama is promoting organic gardening at the local level, how come her husband is doing everything he can to prevent that from happening? That's a very big red flag.
Yes, it is. And it just seems to me it's part and parcel of window dressing that they're very good at. And they'll with one hand show one face, and with the other they'll show the exact opposite. So it's really a sad state of affairs, but you just cannot believe anything coming out of the mouths of any government officials now. They just are not credible. They haven't been credible for decades. And anyone who continues to believe anything they say is a fool. I'm sorry. I mean, it's just a shame, because that's the way it is. Now, a lot of people will blame the big corporations, but, the big corporations can't force you to buy from them. They can't force you, for example, to shop at Walmart. It takes a sort of what I call the fatal embrace between government and big industry to do that. They get laws passed, always in the public interest, of course, to force you to limit your choices and force you to either deal with a government fiat monopoly or to make the competition either drive it out of business or to make it so comparatively expensive you are then forced into the arms of the ones who are in league with the government. That's the way it works. It doesn't just work because Big Pharma is bad. No, it's Big Pharma is bad because they spend $6 million a day lobbying the whole of Congress and the agency offices to get the laws passed and the rules and regulations enacted that they want so that they can preserve their market share. That's what it's all about, and that's why they spend the big bucks doing that.
And that brings up the Wizard of Oz, Dr. Oz. I don't know if you watch him. I've been watching. I try to watch his show every day. We have a medical minion, a heart surgeon, who's promoting natural, quote-unquote, supplements. Of course, he promotes microwaving. He promotes buying the cheapest supplements you can find and things of that nature. But it's hilarious to me to see that they're now having this doctor on mainstream TV that's talking about different supplements and the health benefits of these different health supplements. How come he hasn't lost his license? Medical doctors like me that do the same thing, I've lost their licenses. What is obvious to me is that they're trying to make mainstream medical doctors, basically being looked upon the public like, as good guys. And, of course, everything he's talking about on his shows is not taught in medical school. But he's trying to create, you know, an audience of people that say, oh, well, Dr. Oz is doing research and he's promoting different things that are good. Well, if you keep vaccinating, which he promotes, if you keep microwaving, which he promotes, if you keep buying the cheapest supplements you can find that are made by Big Pharma, sold at Walmart and Walgreens, etc., which he promotes, you're not going to be healthy anyways. But he's another mind control aspect of the whole thing that's being brought in to bring people to think that medical doctors are good guys. And that's a very obvious phenomenon that's happening, in my opinion, with him.
Yeah. Well, you, as a medical doctor, you've been in the heart of the beast, and you know it probably more clearly than anyone. And I have to say, you've been very complimentary of the National Health Federation, but we have to reciprocate, and we're very complimentary of you. You've been a real pioneer, and as such, you've gotten a lot of arrows in your back that you didn't deserve, but by virtue of being a pioneer, you've been the recipient of them. So we are in awe of you, Dr. Carley, and all you've done, and what you've done to promote real health and not ill health.
Well, I'm not looking for accolades, okay? I went to medical school because I wanted to help people. Once I started my residency and I realized that my profession was killing people, that's when I decided I'm going to cause the death of medicine. It's a very daunting task. But I'm doing this because it's the right thing to do. And because I wanted to help people, that's why I went into this profession to begin with. And people have to do their own research. I always tell people, don't believe me, check it out for yourself. Because we are actually facing the very extinction of the human race, especially with vaccines that are corrupting our very genetic structure. This is not a joke. And it's daunting, but I am convinced that with the truth on our side and organizations like yours, that eventually we will wake up a critical mass of people that are willing to say, we're not going to take it anymore. Especially, we're not going to pay for it. As I said, the FDA and the NIH and all the organizations that fund big pharma and big agricultural organizations, etc., allowing them to keep doing what they're doing, and we're paying for it. It's criminal, and it has to stop.
Yes, I absolutely agree. And that's one thing that we've been fighting on the front as well, is protecting those alternative doctors who have been, and we can't do it all because we don't have enough resources, but where we can, we do protect alternative doctors who have been attacked by the medical licensing boards and the like. I used to do that practice. I don't do it so much anymore because the codex work takes up so much of my time, but I've been before the New York State Medical Board. I've been before the California State Medical Board to defend doctors who have been attacked by those boards for what are deemed out of ordinary practices. And in fact, all these doctors were doing were trying to heal their patients and do it in a much better way than the conventional doctors did.
And as we've discussed off the air, if only I'd known about you, unfortunately, when I was attacked by the New York State Medical Board for my alleged delusion of conspiracy for a PuffyCat TV show that I did, the attorney that I paid to come and help me, Ralph Fisichella, works with Rima LeBeau and General Stubblebine of National Health Solutions. When they
Natural Solutions Foundation.
Natural Solutions Foundation. And he refused to actually do anything. When he was prevented from even coming into the room to help me, he just got in his car and drove home. He did not, you know, file any kind of appeal on that basis. And that was, you know, when I started to have to say, I guess I hired the wrong guy. But in fact, yes, that's what's going on. People have to realize any doctor that steps out of the box is going to be attacked. And if you want to have your health, you need to support foundations like National Health Federation, as well as doctors that are actually doing the right thing. If you don't, the powers that be are going to cause you to suffer and die. That's the writing on the wall, and that's self-evident. And it's a very big frustration for me. Like I said, the woman on the school bus that's being taunted by seventh graders because she's fat is getting $600,000 worth of support. And what's happening to you and I? Well, I guess this is the world in which we live. It's called hell.
Yes, unfortunately, there is too much ill health going on out in the world. And yes, I wish I had known you back then, when you had that case before the board.
But it's okay, because actually I have overwhelmed them. That's when they demanded I have psychiatric treatment, be it drugging, institutionalization, or electroshock therapy. I told them they can keep their license. I'm a teacher now. And it's really funny how it's all working out, because now I'm teaching students all over the world how to do my protocol and to not be under their auspices. So, you know, it's all good, although it's been very traumatic. But the bottom line is, go ahead.
No, I was going to say it all works out for the better. You were definitely, and I've seen some of your case, and you were definitely railroaded on that. But it is funny how it works out for the better. When I was kept from being put back on the U.S. delegation to Codex, it looked like the end of the world. But it turned out to be the best thing that could have happened. By doing that, it forced me to get INGO recognition for the National Health Federation, where we then had our own separate microphone and could speak out at the meeting just the same as the U.S. delegation could. So it really led to a wonderful result, and actually I'm very thankful to the U.S. FDA delegate for having triggered that event and making or helping to make that come to pass.
Exactly. And on that note, I want to thank you, Scott Tipps from National Health Federation, for an outstanding show. People, spread the word. Tell everybody about these archives. I will also send this to you, Scott, so that you can use it for your purposes. Spread the word, people. We have the organizations and the people in place to protect you, and you need to support the ones that are doing that. And on that note, I want to thank you so much, Scott, for a very excellent show. We'll keep in touch. And
yes,
keep on doing what you're doing. I never imagined I would say I've met an attorney with a conscience, what I have. So I guess hell is frozen over. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Dr. Carley, and thank you for letting me be on your really special show. I really am honored. Thank you. And
welcome
to all your
back. You're welcome back anytime you have an update, so keep in touch.
Okay. We will. Thank you. All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye.